I just can't let these dogs go unwanted.
I'm going to spill. My password is also my favorite soul kitty with a bunch of different numbers and whatever behind it.
Yeah, she's my role model. And she's the one that really got me into it because we both have this passion for saving animals.
Hi, y'all. It's Layla with Buddy's Besties. I'm really excited to be here today with Mark from the Simon Foundation. So Mark Greenberg, you and your wife, Linda, started the Simon Foundation. So tell me a little bit about it.
Well, we started it. We actually started the foundation over 23, 24 years ago. And we did the rescue of these dogs in our house. We had a lot of dogs around, a lot of crates around, and we were doing a lot of walking, myself included, 20, 25 dogs, sometimes three times a day. And then because we were saving more and more animals, we bought a regular commercial kennel, which gave us a lot of, areas to put the dogs.
So yet you bought a facility. Enough,
so, what's that?
You bought a facility.
Yeah, facility, a commercial kennel in Bethlehem, Connecticut. And that gave us a greater capacity. And we brought in more dogs, dogs that needed homes, dogs that were abandoned, or whatever the case may be. There are so many different reasons why people can't keep the dogs or let them go or abandon them. So we kept on increasing our capacity until around 2012, we decided to build what's now our facility in Bloomfield, Connecticut, which is even bigger than the commercial kennel. It's 36,000 square feet big. We opened up, I think it was June 1, 2014. And we have capacity for 130 dogs and 75 cats in cat condos. We have full staff.
Okay.
And we take in as many dogs that we can that need us, and then we find great homes for them.
So do you have other facilities on the 36,000 square feet? Is it just the kennels, or do you have like boarding, and do you have other things, or is it just really the rescue in the sanctuary?
No. It's actually, it includes boarding. It includes an area to clean them, grooming. And it also includes a very, very nice, very large training room where we train them. And we make them civil if they're not civil. And we give classes to the public as well.
If I'm in Connecticut and I have a dog, I can bring them there and I can pay to have my dog trained. And do those funds go to your facility to rescue more dogs? Yeah.
Yeah, you can, but you have to make a reservation for that kind of, service.
Sure.
Just like you'd have to make a reservation for boarding or grooming, training. You have to make a reservation to see the dogs that are available for adoption. We try to mate these animals with the best possible situation. So, for instance, if a dog is dog aggressive, we're not looking to place that dog into a home that has another dog. So we tried to find the best situation. We have an application where we actually check out prior veterinary experiences to make sure that the person treated their dog correctly and properly and got the various vaccines they had to. So it's a procedure. We want to place these dogs once, not twice or three times.
That's
right. We don't like getting the calls to pick up the dog because something didn't work.
Oh, we always do.
Yeah. How did you guys decide that you wanted to do this? Was there like a special dog in your life or something that happened that got you excited about doing something like this?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, Linda and I always loved dogs and we always got rescue dogs for ourselves. We always stopped on the side of the road to pick up dogs that might be lost or dogs that didn't have collars. And it just became one of these things that we felt that we could give back to the dog and cat community. And it did become a little obsessive with us. I mean, after all, we started the Simon Foundation and the building with 36,000 square feet. We built it from scratch. We donated tons of money to make it happen. And this is just part of what we love.
I love that. That's great. What about your mission do you think resonates with people? I mean, you guys probably have to fundraise and you services and things like that. So what do you think the thing is about what you do that resonates with people that aren't like, I'm an animal lover, you're an animal lover. What resonates for folks when you talk to them about what you do?
Well, what we do resonates with people like us, you know, people who love animals, who realize that they're innocent, that they came to this world and, you know, what's their purpose but to love people and love little kids and play with them. It's so we mostly, our mission resonates with people who love animals.
Got it.
Very clearly. We also do the boarding for the city of Hartford and the town of Bloomfield. Those are two obvious, one's a city, one's a town that we're located in. So we make sure that these animals, which were picked up on the street or abandoned or whatever, get a good life in our facility. They're treated right, you know. They're given the same care as all of our own animals or the other boarders for that matter. They're respected and they're taken care of.
That's great. Do you partner with other rescues and sanctuaries to transport and to find home? Do you partner with other facilities or do sure. you just kind of do it? Yeah, you do. Okay.
No. We have relationships with other organizations as well. Sometimes we take dogs that they don't have the room to take. We were doing boarding for another organization that didn't have a facility that only used foster parents, you know, for their boarding. Mm-hmm. But when they get overflowed, when they're overflowing, we take some of their dogs. So we do partner. Absolutely, we do.
So, Mark, what was your life before this? What's the skill that you brought? Like, I'm a marketer in my regular life. I have a job outside of doing this that I love. What was your expertise that you brought over to do this that you think makes you a better rescuer?
Well, I'm not sure I have any expertise. You know, my real business is real estate. It okay. was then and it is now. That business has given me the financial capability of building the rescue and to pay the bills and the vet bills and the salaries of our folks. But other than that, I don't know if I have any specific calling other than the fact that I just can't let these dogs go unwanted. I guess that was my calling. It would kill me to see dogs on the street or dogs that were about to be put to sleep. And that's what happened. Linda and I just decided we got to do something about it. So we did.
I love it. People that take action in this world are changing the world. And I think it's great. Where do you see your organization in like 5 years? You just opened this 10 years ago, maybe 36,000 square feet. Do you see additional facilities? Do you see bigger space? Like, what do you see for the future?
Well, we opened up 2014. So that was 11 years ago or something like that. But before that, we were doing the rescue out of our home and out of the commercial kennel for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Long enough time to actually know that none of the original rescues that we have are still with us. Our longest rescue was our dog Derby, who passed away at the age of 19. But now we're on the second and third and fourth set of rescues, I guess. Well, you know, it's pretty expensive to run a facility like this. It was expensive to build it, expensive to keep it. And I don't necessarily think that we're the ones to increase the size on this one. But we want to keep on doing the best job that we can with what we have. We're not small. I think we're the second largest rescue facility in Connecticut. Fundraising is always difficult. There are some people who continue to give. We have something called the Donors Club. And every single month, the same people give pretty much the same amount every single month. And when something good happens in their life, they supplement it. And then every so often, we're named in the wills of folks who have been to the Simon Foundation or have a specific love for animals. I think our largest bequest was somewhere in the neighborhood of $500,000.
Oh.
That would be lovely if we could be named more. But rescuing is a love. but it's also a business. You have to pay the bills. So I don't think that we're going to grow anymore, but we're going to continue to do the best job that we can with, you know, our facility and our resources.
How do you think about educating people about what you do, rescues, just rescues in general? How do you think about telling people what you do, the difference between a rescue and a sanctuary and an actual shelter, right? There's differences between all of those. So how do you think about educating people and maybe getting more people to think about donating for what you do?
Well, that's a good question. First of all, there's what we call a no-kill shelter, which we are. And there are municipal pounds that kill animals after 10 days, 14 days. We were just named by Best Friends as officially as a no-kill shelter here. And we're very proud of that. We do anything and everything we can to keep the animals. We've had some animals in our facility for 9, 10, 11 years because we simply won't put them down.
Yeah.
But the education to the public is a little difficult. You know, it's a constant battle. Sometimes I feel like we're preaching to the choir. The people who understand what we do don't need to be told. The people who don't understand what we do need to be told time and time and time again, and sometimes they don't get it. So yeah. It's one of those frustrating things.
It's an ongoing challenge.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit, who's Simon? Your foundation is called the Simon Foundation. So tell me a little bit about Simon.
Yeah, well, Simon was a dog of ours. One of our very early rescues. We probably rescued him 22 or 23 years ago. And we named the foundation after him because he was tragically run over near our house in the street.
It was done purposely.
Yeah. Well, Linda said it was done purposely. He wasn't careful. In any case, he was run over. And so we named the foundation after him. As a matter of fact, the signage that we have shows an image of him. We took one of the pictures of Simon, and his image is basically on the building, right? You know, as you enter or as you turn left to go into the street. So we remember him by passing him on the signs and going in the door and seeing him up above.
And how many dogs and cats do you have now in your personal home?
Good question. Okay, so we're down from 23 or 24 years ago. We have four dogs, two cats, yeah.
It's a respectable number, Mark. That's a respectable number.
It's a real number. It's a manageable number. Part of the problem is that we travel back and forth from Connecticut to Vermont, and it's simply impossible to have more than that. Plus, we have one rescue that we don't think gets along too well with other dogs. So we have to have two separate areas.
It's a little difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who is your greatest role model and why? And doing all this work? Who do you think about is your kind of the person you look up to?
My wife. Linda, she's standing here, she's not in front of the camera. She's my role model. And she's the one that really got me into it because we both have this passion for saving animals. So at first I was stuck on the question, but it's obvious that it's my wife.
I love that answer. That's a great answer. And what piece of advice have you received in your life that you think is just like the best advice you've received from anybody?
On rescue or on anything?
On anything.
Oh, I don't know. I don't tend to listen to too many people. You know, I'm a little pig-headed, so I make my own best advice sometimes. And my most recent advice to people, and this is a little bizarre, but my recent advice to people is to live your life to the fullest. And live every day as if it were the last, because one day it will be, you know. So enjoy life, enjoy your family, enjoy your wife, enjoy your close people. And almost anything else is unimportant. So that's my advice.
That's great advice. Can you tell me a story about a specific rescue that you just really was very passionate about in your 20 plus years of doing this? Can you give me a good story of a specific dog or cat that you found a home for?
Ashley?
No, not Ashley. Ashley's number two. Timber, I was thinking about. Timber was a German Shepherd who is scared of anything and everything.
And we shut down.
Shut down completely. But we trained him sufficiently to the point where he was adoptable. And the people that we adopted him out to, the woman, the wife, would sleep down on the couch with Timber. Timber refused to go up the stairs. So she would sleep downstairs on the couch with Timber for the full 5 or 6 years that they had him. And I look upon that as a great story. There are so many stories. You know, you think about which is the one that is most appealing. Linda just said Ashley. Now, Ashley became our personal dog, one of the early rescues. We took her from another rescue. And some of these rescues just want to get the dogs out of their home or get them out of their facility or get them out of their foster home. So Ashley had a particular issue with me sometimes at the beginning where she would just bite me. bite anybody. She was scared. She was scared. So the first few days she would run after me and bite my ankle. But she turned out to be the most loyal, great dog. As a matter of fact, she's probably my number one dog. I can tell you that for a fact because I use her as my password and everything. And I'm not going to say what it is because it's got numbers and, you know, exclamation points and a capital. So I can't say it on the air what it is, but I use her for all my passwords.
And I think that's when you know your animal is the animal, is when they are the password. So I'm going to spill. My password is also my favorite Soul Kitty with a bunch of different numbers and whatever behind it. Yeah. But I had a cat that I adored. His name was Hermes. He lived 22 years and I nursed him through kidney disease and all kinds of things, but he is still the password baby. And my husband says he will know when we've adopted another cat that is as important to me as Hermes because they will become the password baby. But right now, he's still got the password.
Well, you know, when you're setting up a Mac computer, they don't let you use your animal. They say bad password, can't use animal. I just set up one yesterday and they said, oh my God, you know.
Yeah, I don't like that. I need to be able to remember it. That's why I need it to be. I can't have that many passwords.
These programs don't want you to be able to remember it because other people remember it also. So, I mean, I have a list of passwords that's 3 pages long on a spreadsheet. It just drives me nuts, but that's not for now.
So on the animals, how many animals would you say that the Simon Foundation has saved, rescued, found homes for? How many animals through the whole time you've been around?
Oh, I can't venture a guess, except that I'll say it's in the thousands.
Thousands.
For sure. You know, it's just simple math. I'm sure it's in the thousands.
And what kind of advice
We hear from these people who adopt the animals all the time. And sometimes we wish we shouldn't hear from them, which is an adoption from 10 years ago tells us their beloved cat or dog passed away. You know, we get those all the time.
Yeah.
Don't like to hear about that, but we do like to hear that they had 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 years of good life with a family.
That's right.
We become a family. We become a family with our adopters.
It's a network. And I rescue as well. And I rescue from the same. I actually doing this work with Buddy, having Buddy the streamer. We've connected with tons of rescues, especially in our area that we work with. And I rescue from those same places. Like she'll call me and say, oh my gosh, I have a cat and he looks like XYZ and I think you would love him. And guess what? I end up with those cats. So I think it's great because you build a relationship there like family. It's really important, I think, too, when you bring an animal home to trust where you're sending it. And I'm curious, Mark, your advice on when you send a pet home with somebody, what kind of things do you tell them, especially for a first-time rescuer with dogs? What are some of the things they should keep in mind?
Well, they got to keep in mind, they got to be patient. They have to understand that puppies are not always too well behaved. We had two puppies from 6, 7, 8 weeks old. They're still not well behaved, but they're getting better. They're 2 years old now. 2 years old. Yeah, they're not puppies now. They should be a little better than they are now. But it used to be years ago that Linda and I would do these adoptions ourselves. We go to house to house, take the application and tell these folks what to look out for and how to be careful, how not to let the dog open up a screen door and run in the street. And of course, we've had tragedies like that where I remember I got a call and dog knocked out the screen door and went on the road and was killed. I mean, these things all happen. So we try to keep all these things in mind and try to tell the potential adopter to be careful of A, B, C, D, and E. And, you know, hopefully they do.
You know? Yeah. It's important. It's important for people to, you know, you don't want to have to home and rehome and, you know, third time's the charm. It's not fun for anybody. It's not fun for you. It's not fun for the animal. It's not fun for the people.
Well, you talk about rehoming. One of our commitments is that if it doesn't work out at the home, we take the dog or cat back. So we've made a commitment first to the dog and cat, second to the adopters, right? They're sort of secondary. The dog and cats are first. So we take back these animals and then we try again, you know?
Yeah.
And if we can't find the right home for them, they live out their lives at our place. We call those the sanctuary animals.
Yeah. So when you have a sanctuary animal, do you keep them separate from the rescue animals or are they kind of all together?
No, not really.
All together.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the same area, you don't want to keep them separate because then they become isolated and probably become worse.
Sure.
You know, and we have certain people that are volunteers who walk these dogs. So these dogs are not attacking people. They're just not making it in a home. So they love when their volunteer comes, takes them out, you know, 2 or 3 times a day. We have lots of dog walkers who are volunteers. Lots of them. So although they're living their life at the Simon Foundation, they're living a pretty darn good life there, you know?
So the whole reason you started this.
To them. Yeah.
How do you find volunteers? Is that fairly simple? People like, I know we do a couple times a year, we do like the puppy like petting at where I work. They'll bring in puppies to pet and things like that. Do you find it easy to find people to come and help and, you know, walk dogs and clean stalls and things like that?
Yeah, we find it very easy for volunteers to try to volunteer at the Simon Foundation, but we find it very hard for them to keep their commitment. So they'll say, yeah, I'll volunteer. But then they're supposed to come Tuesday at the call at 9 o'clock to walk dogs and they don't show up. So, I mean, even volunteers, you have to find dedicated volunteers who keep a schedule, right?
Yeah.
You know, otherwise the dogs aren't going to get walked. So we find them easy, but it's hard to keep good ones, you know, on a
schedule. My last question is a two-parter. What's the most challenging part of running a rescue?
What's the most challenging part? That's a good question. Paying the bills. That's challenging.
Yeah.
You know, we really feel like we fulfill a mission quite nicely. We get these dogs in from divorces, from the streets, sometimes from the city of Hartford next door where we do the boarding. We'll take a dog from them. So we do our mission really well, but I got to tell you, it's expensive to run a 36,000 square foot rescue facility.
Yeah.
That's challenging. It's always challenging.
And what's the most rewarding part of running the rescue?
Getting the emails from all these folks and getting the pictures, you know, having the postings on Facebook, Instagram, those first pictures with the kids lying down with the animal, a dog, cat or whatever, and getting those pictures and statuses. And that's wonderful. That's the most important part.
The alumni of the Simon Foundation. I love it.
Yeah, it's a very, very big crew of people that we have. Adopters, it's lots. I mean, I know at one point we had over 12,000, 13,000 on our Facebook Paige's followers, I think, or following or something like
yes.
that. So, yeah, we have a lot of people who follow us, and we enjoy everything that's put up on the Facebook page, all the pictures and joyful things we hear from them, which is great.
It's great. Well, we thank you and Linda for everything that you're doing at the Simon Foundation. For our viewers and listeners, if you want to donate or want to check out what the Simon Foundation is doing, you can go to www.thesimonfoundation.org and learn more and more about what they are doing. Thank you, Mark, for everything that you guys do. It was great talking to you today. And for all my buddies, besties, listeners, and watchers, remember, adopt, don't shop.